you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
Now we're rolling, by the way, so welcome to the goddamn show. The Believe You Me podcast. I'm just going to tip this down because there we go. I look considerably thicker than Anthony Smith right now, but that isn't the case in real life. You are looking lean, Anthony. It's almost as if, it's almost like you were training for a fight or something like that.
Yeah, I've been getting after it, dude. I'm fucking feeling good. I'm leaning out. I'm feeling strong, and then just a big old kick in the dick over the weekend. So that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, listen, you know, clearly joking about it, but you had some news at the weekend when you were live on air. Obviously, it's about the 282 main event. You know, that didn't go to plan, I think. You know, I don't think anybody saw a draw happening. We'll talk about the analysis of the fight in a minute. But you got some news that your fight had been cancelled live on air, so... Yeah, just come on, mate. This is your segment. This is your emotions and, you know, your situation. So give us the lowdown, please.
Yeah. So the fight went how it went. I suspect we're gonna get into that. But you know, when it ended in a draw, I just honestly I figured, well, they'll probably just run that back again. That kind of sets all of us back a little bit. But that's fighting. So, then we're going through the post show and as Ashley Brewer. She said, oh, you know, we got some breaking news. Right then they came in my ear and said, Dana just announced that Jamal Hill's fighting, is going to fight Glover for the title. And then it came out of her mouth too. So I heard it 5 seconds before. They were trying to give me a heads up, but that was as much of a heads up as they could have given me. You know, they heard it by the time they were able to say it to me, she said it. So, and I was just, it's just how things have been going lately. You know, I just keep getting kicked in the dick. It's the Ryan Spann fight went well. Then I had the surgery. Then I had the staph infection, which set me back. So then I was out 10 months. Then I battled back, you know, I have this fight going with Ankalaev. It was going the way I wanted it to. Then I break my ankle, you know, and then it's all right, cool. I got a great opponent. Jamal Hill's on a good streak, get a W over him. And it puts us right back in the title hunt. And then, you know, then they pulled Jamal. And I get it. Like, I understand the UFC has to make decisions. I understand that the show has to go on. You know what I mean? And to be fair, he's coming off of a win. You know, he's on a winning streak. He's doing his thing. So it's not even the decision that they made. It's just the way that I found out. But honestly, they made it so fast that there was probably no time to get to me, and it just, I'm not blaming anybody. I'm not pointing the finger, but it sucks. It sucks big time.
Allow me to try and put a silver lining on it for you. Okay. And here's where everyone's going to go off the deep and say, Bisping is a company man. But as you said, they do have a company to run and they got to keep shit moving on. Mm-hmm. I think that fight that happened on Saturday night, and no disrespect to Magomed or Jan Blachowicz, you know, because Jan, I know a little bit, and I think a lot of him. You know, I've got a lot of respect for the guy, and he's always great anytime I've dealt with him. So I don't want to talk shit. But that fight, I don't think there's an appetite to see that fight run back immediately. Because to your point, I totally agree. The logical thing would be run that back. It was a draw, so run it back and see who's going to be the champ. But this is also a business, and they're charging people for pay-per-views. They're charging people for entry into the building to watch live. And as I say, I don't think that fight anyone had the appetite to watch that back again immediately.
I
and
it's totally like, well, agree.
Yeah, exactly. So what do they do? So then Glover, obviously, is next in line. That's a fact. So they go, who do we do? And then they think Anthony Smith or Jamal Hill. And don't be offended when I say this. I think the reality is, Anthony, you lost to Magomed and you snapped your leg, right? Mm-hmm. So in a weird way, that puts Jamal as the first choice. But here's the silver lining. All you've got to do, I think, in this situation, if you get one win, then you're fighting for the belt next. Do you know what I mean? Because those two, Magomed and Yana Kanabi, they're eradicated for a minute. Glover has stepped up. He's now getting the fight without having to fight the winner of them two. He's fighting Jamal Hill. So all that means in the meantime is you get one fight, one win. And there's obviously, I don't make the calls, but logic would say one good win and you're fucking next. And they're pretty decent at making up. You know, because you got messed around a little bit there. You were training for a fight that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, UFC always have a pretty good reputation of making things right in the background. You know that. So I think, and far be it for me to speak, but my opinion would be one fight, Anthony, and one win, and you're fighting for the belt next. So while, yes, I don't know how many weeks and time and effort and mental stress has all gone out the fucking window, but it all parlays into getting you back into the octagon healthy and ready. So if you try and look at it from that perspective, because of course you do, you get mad, you get angry, you go, what the fuck? All that time wasted. But a different perspective, maybe a different way of looking at it, that maybe doesn't seem too bad. What do you think of them? What do you say to that?
No, I agree with you. It took me a couple of days to get there. That's why I haven't said anything, because I knew that if I reacted right away publicly, for sure, I was going to lose my shit. And honestly, it wasn't really directed at anybody, because I understand Jamal. I understand his point of view. I would do the same thing. Go take the fight. That's an opportunity of a lifetime. I understand the UFC having to make a fight right away. It worked out business-wise, I think, for the UFC to book that title fight in Brazil. Glover's ready. Jamal obviously was willing to take it.
And it's next month.
Right.
It's next month, so it's not going to be held up for long.
Right. So, I understand it. It just doesn't – just understanding the situation doesn't make it feel any better. You know what I mean? And it's just because I had a really great opponent in front of me that was going to get me right back into the hunt. So now – I think from what it sounds like, Ankalaev is pretty banged up. Like, his leg is pretty bad. Blachowicz, you know, like his last win. I'm with you. I like Blachowicz a lot. I really do. I think I've always had great interactions with him. He's a real salt of the earth type of guy.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, he had a weird win over Rakic, and then a draw. So like, how do you really argue that? You know what I mean? And then you got Glover. Glover and Jamal are going to fight. That logically leaves me next, as long as I can get a win. The problem is, a lot of those guys are booked in the top 10. They're either booked, they're about to fight, they're whatever, or just fought. So it's really just finding me an opponent for March is the problem. If you guys can read between the lines, I feel the UFC's made me feel a whole lot better. In the last 2 days about the whole situation. So
was that a little cha-ching?
I mean, they're taking care of me. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not always cash. Some of it's opportunity, you know, we'll see. We'll see what, I mean, they're going to need, with the way the title fight has been, I suspect they're going to need a backup. I don't know who else it would be.
I don't suppose you'd be ready to go down to Brazil and be like another fight on there.
Yeah, I would.
Oh, you would.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. What is that date? January what?
23rd, I think.
23rd.
23rd, hey, 21st, something like that.
So they throw you an opponent for January 23rd. You know, no scrub, but someone you just go down.
So I would, if I did it, I would just go as a backup.
Oh, right. Literally just as a backup, kind of like Volkanovski did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's been a couple more. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I would just weigh in as a backup. And then... you know, we'll just need to find me someone in March. That's what they're working on right now.
Okay. Okay. Well, listen, initially some shock and upset for you and frustration sure. Yeah. And I totally get it. But number one, you're being very mature and level-headed about it. Mm-hmm. And like John Anik said, you know, fair play to you when you were live on air, because that must've been a little shock to the system.
Oh, I was ready to flip the fucking desk. And again, it wasn't like directed at anyone. It was just the situation. The situation. I had a fight. I've been getting ready for it. Like, there's a lot of time. And I think sometimes this gets missed. by the fans, because, you know, you see a lot of people like, well, he wasn't fighting until March. He's got some time, like whatever. There's a lot of planning and there's a lot of scheduling. And like, I'm probably 10 or 12 grand into this training camp already. And it's not like, it's not an astronomical amount of money, but it just goes to show, like, there's flights and there's hotels and there's rental cars and there's training partners, then their flights and their hotels and their rental cars. And there's, you got to, that all has to be scheduled way ahead of time. You know what I mean? Yeah, so like that goes down to my broadcasting schedule, where I've turned down opportunities to work the desk. There's opportunities with ESPN that I've passed on because I'm willing to set that stuff aside so I can focus in training camp. So like, there's a lot of things that go into that. And so that was the initial, like, well, that now that, like, that's out the window for now. So, you know, it's just like, God, I just want to flip this fucking desk, you know, like, not at anybody, just in general.
The desk, Anthony, flip the desk. Come on. I almost flipped the desk on Fox Sports one time.
Really?
I think a scarecrow ran up behind me and scared me at Halloween. Those desks can be flipped. That would be great TV. They get some quite the viewing figures. I'm not sure you'd ever work for ESPN ever again, but you know, you go out with a bang. Better to burn out than to fade away. All jokes aside, mate, no, it is a shitter, but every cloud has a silver lining, you know? Different perspectives.
And Jamal called me.
That was nice. I saw. Yeah. I think I heard that somewhere.
Yeah, he called me.
What'd he say?
He wants me to help him.
How do you feel about that? That's bizarre. Potential future opponent.
You know, I didn't really feel that weird about it, to be honest with you. Like, him and I have always been really friendly. You know, I think that we're kind of cut from the same cloth. And so we've always gotten along very, very well. You know, even when the MSG show, him and I knew that we were fighting and no one else did. And we stood in that bar at the SiriusXM thing, and we probably had 3 or 4 drinks together just talking about life and kids and, you know, lots of jokes where, like, hey, you know, you make sure you don't take any body shots.
But on the, as you're doing that, and it's all love, you know, because we're professionals. You're fighting down the line, but you're checking him out. You're going, no, he's looking.
Yeah, it's like standing next to him.
You know, you're secretly eyeing him like, he looks solid, fucking hell. Or you're thinking, oh, look at that. Look at the belly on him. Shape right now. Yeah, you have another drink, Jamal. Go ahead. Here, have a slice shots. Of pizza as well.
You want some shots? You just got some shots.
Spike it. So, a little drug in there.
I think I'm going to do it. Well, I don't think I'm going to. We're not going to be sparring. I don't think it's a secret that Glover's most dangerous to Jamal in the grappling realm.
Of course.
I'm one of the few guys that Glover hasn't sliced and diced on the ground. You know, towards the end, you know, when I was hurt real bad and tired, he was eventually able to mount me. But, you know, I was able to kind of slow him down on the ground and not, you know, not get submitted or not get passed and mounted and beat up or whatever. So I think that's the area that he wants some help in. It's just, you know, he needs a big body that can hold him down.
May I throw a hypothetical situation at you, though?
Mm-hmm.
You help Jamal. You do a great job. You train this guy up. You realize to yourself, wow, I've got a real future in training because I have turned Jamal Hill into an absolute killer. You unleash all of your ground secrets. Here's what Glover tried to do to me. Here's what you got to do. You show him, you teach him, you improve Jamal. Jamal goes out, beats Glover to share it in style, becomes the light heavyweight champion of the world. In the meantime, you have another fight. You smash that guy. All of a sudden, you're fighting Jamal Hill. And he's like, yeah, motherfucker, I know all your tricks. I know all your secrets. I know all your ways of getting back to your feet or submission escapes. And then you start to hate yourself.
We'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Yeah. No, I'm only kidding. Yeah. Well, do us a favor. Reach out to Jamal. We'd love to have him on the show, of course.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, if you don't mind, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Reach out, get him on. Talking about getting him on, Harrington and Brian, welcome to the show. How are you, fellas?
What's up, Mike? How are you?
So when I logged on initially, Brian had shades on, looking like, I don't know what you look like.
Oh, see? I am
John Lennon.
Looking like a gangster John Lennon.
I got him.
I said, "How you doing?" He said, "Oh, I don't feel too good." I said, "Why is that?" He said, "Oh, you were very, very drunk last night, were you, Brian?"
Oh yeah, happy hour is a problem. I expected my tab to be about $150. It was $60, and I decided to just drink more.
Does it make you a bad person?
So wait a second. Your tab was only $60. So you mentally prepared for 150. So you had to drink your way to 150.
I got fucking close. I sure did.
Yeah. Well, God bless you. God bless you. Because I did text you last night about something. You said, oh, I'm having a good time. Yeah. I'm having a good time. I don't want to say too much on air. Harry, too much new with you, bud.
Absolutely nothing. Just we're gearing up home stretch. It's now 3 months and 10 days away from when the baby's coming. So we're in the third trimester, I think, right?
Yes. How's didn't that ask for a baby update every single time.
Yeah. That's how I'm doing. That's the only thing I'm doing, Mike.
Babies and periods and nappies and diapers. I'm in Toronto. Well, no, I'm not in Toronto. I thought I was going to go to Toronto. I'm in Burlington, Ontario. I look out the window, it's snowy, it's icy, it's cold as hell. Did a little cameo in a movie, in and out. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever, and maybe, I don't want to say too much, because I don't know what I can and can't say, but have you ever wanted to dress up as a medieval knight?
Yes.
Anthony Smith? Yeah, yes. Me too. Well, I got to do that in this movie. And oh my God, go figure. But when you're walking in a massive metal suit, it's very heavy. It's extremely fucking heavy. Like, I could hardly walk. I had to do fight scenes wielding around a massive broadsword. Do you know what I mean? And then fucking, like, I'd fall on the floor and get up. I could hardly get back to my feet. My back was killing. Those medieval suits, man. I mean, yeah, they are, they're very protective if you get hit with a sword or not, something. But fuck me. They're heavy, bro. They're heavy.
Do you ever do, like, these roles or like, these cameos and get to keep any of the shit?
Oh my God. Sometimes you do. Like when I worked on Triple X in Toronto, actually, the wardrobe that they had me wearing was all that super cool designer stuff. Do you know what I mean? And I got to take some of that stuff because it was a big budget production. But no, I don't get to keep a medieval knight suit. And getting it through customs would be an issue. But generally you don't. But Triple X was a big, big budget. So the wardrobe one was like, yeah, come on. They won't care. You can have that one.
See, I would try to just put that into my contract. Like, listen, you just take some of my pay, but I want that medieval goddamn armor.
Yeah. I'll take the. I would like. I mean, that wouldn't that look cool if you had the kind of home that it would fit when you walk in and it's all put together on like a mannequin. Oh God, I love medieval shit like that. It always blew my mind. I'm in a hotel room, as you can see. I'm drinking coffee with powdered creamer. The luxury.
The life of Michael Bisbee.
Oh, yeah. It's nonstop, bro. I'll fly straight back down to Vegas tonight to commentate something else, and then I'll be back home, and I'm home for a while. All right, let's just talk about Manscaped real quick. You know the deal. The below-the-waist groomer. But, you know, they've got multiple packages available. The Platinum Package and the Performance Package. The Performance Package, of course, you get the Lawnmower 4.0, their best version, skin-safe technology. You can groom your most valuable possessions without hurting yourself. It's waterproof. Got a great battery. It's got a light, all that stuff. But you get the Crop Preserver, the Ball Deodorant, and the Crop Reviver Ball Toner. As I say, that is the Performance Package. You can also get the Platinum Package. And in the Platinum Package, you get everything I just mentioned. Plus, you get the Ultra Premium Body Wash, the Ultra Premium 2-in-1 Shampoo and Conditioner. I use that. It's very, very good. And the Ultra Premium Deodorant. So if you get the Platinum Package, you are covered. You are square. You are set. Your balls will never be so healthy. They will be jingling all the way. So listen, it's Christmas. It's coming up. Manscaped is a great product. All mentioned on this and a number of different packages available for you. So go to manscaped.com. Use the code BISPIN. You're going to get off 20% and free shipping. It's a great present. I'm telling you right now, there's not a single person that you know. If you get them a Manscaped, there's no way they're not going to appreciate it. So it's a lovely little stocking filler to get for someone, your boyfriend, you know, just anyone that you know. Get them the Manscaped, the Performance or the Platinum Package. Up to you, your call. But as I say, go to manscaped.com, use that code BISPING, and you're going to get 20% off. Oh, and free shipping, of course. So, Saturday night, we're going to go through all the fights. But I feel like the big, big talking point right now involves one Paddy Pimblett and Jared Gordon, right? That's the big talking point. Everyone's got a lot to say about it. I've spoken for a few minutes, so I will turn the baton or hand the baton to you. Jared Gordon, Paddy Pimblett, talk me through the fight and who you thought won.
Okay. Because of where this podcast is vastly listened to, I want to preface this.
Hold on. With... Can I say one thing?
Yeah.
I know why you're going to say that, and you're like, you want to tip lightly. People respect truth.
Yeah.
People respect an honest opinion. I did a BT Sport post-fight show, and I looked at the comments because I said I thought Paddy lost. Mm-hmm. But Nick Pete, who's from Liverpool, he's a Scouser, he said he didn't, and he was getting rinsed in the comments going, what the fuck? Just be honest. Be honest. Mm-hmm. We know your boys and you respect him, but people want an honest opinion. And I respected that out of all, because obviously they all support Paddy. But also when you watch something and you think that he lost, and but then his friends say, no, he won, that's hard to swallow. So I just wanted to say that before you get into it.
Yeah, I hate this situation a lot, because when I give my opinion on something, people automatically think that it's personal. I like Paddy a lot. I think he's great for the sport. I love his personality. He's been nothing but cool to me. He was great on the desk. He stays in character. The dude is doing his damn thing. I like Paddy a lot. Paddy Pimble lost that fight 30-27.
I think so.
I don't think he won a round. I think, you know, in the pre-show, I said, listen, Jared Gordon is way better than people are giving him credit for. And I think that he's technically the better striker. Now, how is he going to deal with the size and the power advantage of Paddy Pimblett, which I think some of his power advantage comes because he does allow himself to get so heavy in between fights that he still carries the power of a 200-pound man. So I think he was outstruck. I think he was out-wrestled. I think in other than the one exchange where Jared Gordon gave up his back, where was the one spot I thought that Paddy was going to have a lot of success. Because Jared does give his back up sometimes. Grant Dawson took his back 3 or 4 times, and Paddy is a fantastic back taker.
Yep, yep.
So other than that one grappling exchange, I thought Jared Gordon outstruck him in the first 2 rounds and then slowed him down and out-wrestled him in the last round. I didn't see a question. I didn't see an issue with the decision being a 30-27 for Jared Gordon. I didn't even fathom that they were going to give it to Paddy. And I still thought Paddy looked good. Like he ran into a guy that I thought was a better technical striker. Paddy's got some issues that he's going to have to address, and he's going to have to address them quickly. He never gets his head off the center line. His chin's up in the air a lot. He throws a lot of naked kicks that got him in trouble. To be fair, Paddy made a lot of technical mistakes.
Yeah, yeah. So I was in the crowd with Mrs. Bisping, you know, mm-hmm. and we had a great time. It's so nice. I mean, the UFC do a great job. The production's phenomenal. So we had an awesome time. But of course, one of the big fights, obviously, was Paddy versus Jared. You know, he was billing it as the people's main event. Same thought. When I was watching it, I said going into that Paddy was going to have a tougher fight than what he thought. He was predicting a first round stoppage. When I spoke to him for BT Sport, he said, Mike, he said, yo, you're going to be wrong. You're going to find out. You're going to owe Nick Pete some money. That's who I made a bet with. You know, so he was very confident. Did not go his way at all. I thought Jared landed the heavier shots, the more significant shots. A lot of Paddy's shots that he was throwing were kind of just landing on the hands and kind of getting blocked a lot. There was nothing particularly clean that landed for Paddy. For Jared, he did find that left hook over and over and over again. And like you could hear the crowd respond when those shots landed and Paddy's head fly back. You know, so that was round one essentially. Yeah, Paddy was busy and he threw some stuff, but I gave it to Jared. Round two, kind of more of the same. And Paddy was retreating a lot. Retreating and circling away, which isn't a good visual for the judges either.
Right.
You know, and because if everything is equal, then it goes to octagon control and aggression and all these other smaller parameters which they use. Mm-hmm. So I thought, and I haven't watched it again yet because I left Vegas and came straight here to work. So I haven't had a chance, but I watched it intently Saturday night. So I thought Jared got round two. Round three, Jared controlled it. And I have an issue with Jared and I have an issue with Paddy for what they both said. I mean, Dana said that Jared had a terrible game plan in round three, right? And in hindsight, that proved to be correct because Jared wasn't ahead on the scorecards, right? Dana said, you know, he shouldn't have gone out there. He should never take it for granted that you're ahead. But on the flip side, Paddy said, oh, I thought I was ahead 2 rounds, so I took the round off. I don't think he took the round off. I think that was just a convenient excuse for getting controlled, pushed up against the fence. Granted, it wasn't exciting stuff, but if there's no damage from either side, then you go to control.
Right.
Things like that. You know, that's not the number one criteria. But if nothing's happening, if one guy is controlling one guy, then you've got to give it to him. Reluctantly, yes. You know, so I was shocked. I was shocked. Now, I don't think it was a huge robbery, although I thought Jared clearly won. I think we've seen worse decisions, mm-hmm. but I was a little shocked for damn sure.
Yeah, we've seen worse scorecards for sure, but I was shocked. I really was. And you know, you look at some of the stats, you know, Patty outlanded him by 3 strikes. Now, to be fair, I think that a lot of those strikes were counted as landed strikes, were landed on the gloves, they were rolling off the shoulders. I don't think all landed strikes are created equal. So, but he did outland him by like 3 or 4 shots, I think. But he also threw 55 more punches. So the percentages of shots landed like really heavily swayed towards Jared Gordon. Jared Gordon was 3 for 6 on takedowns. Patty was 0 for 3. Jared Gordon had 6.5 minutes of control time. Like, it's weird. In a 15-minute fight, someone controls you for almost half the fucking fight. You can't attack people and go out. The one issue I have with Patty right now, I would respect you if you said, listen, the fight was close. It was a tougher fight than I thought it was going to be. Jared Gordon did a fantastic job, but I still feel like I won that round. Or I won that fight. Don't attack people and say, you guys suck my ass. You guys are crazy. That fight wasn't even close. Like you're making a heel turn on accident. Like you're pissing people off because you're almost offending us because we know what we've seen. Yeah. So if you say that fight wasn't even close because you blew him out of the water, we're not stupid. Like it's that delusional stuff that I talked about last week. Like, that delusional belief in himself, it's gone past the delusional belief in himself to just delusional. Like, we're not stupid. We're very educated. MMA fans are extremely educated consumers of the sport. So we know what we're looking at. We know we're watching, and we know that you did not blow out Jared Gordon. And we know that we seen you lose that fight.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, you can take the Blachowicz way of a loss, or you can take the Ankalaev way, because we want to talk about fucking judging. Ankalaev is furious. Give me my belt. I won that fight. Like, was there bad judging in that fight? For sure. But I think the bad judging was making that 5th round a 10-8 for Ankalaev. So had they not fucked up, you'd have lost.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that shortly. We'll keep it on what we're talking about right now. But you're right, because Jan came out and initially said, listen, I don't know if I won. Sorry, I don't know if I lost, but I certainly didn't feel like I won. Mm-hmm. And talk about a beautiful PR move. Because that just instantly gets everybody on your side. Mm-hmm. That just instantly everybody respects you. They're like, God, this guy, what a warrior. And he's so humble. Because what happened with Paddy, and he did, he said that fight wasn't even close. He tried bringing up the Ariel situation with Joe Rogan straight away on the microphone. Joe didn't take him on it. And I've seen now on social media, there's been a bit of a turn. You know what I mean? A lot of people talking crap. Now, he'll get past that if he plays it right. Because it reminds me when I first started in the UFC, I won the Ultimate Fighter. I was getting a lot of attention, you know, and maybe it all goes to your head a little bit. You know what I mean? Because when I fought Matt Hamill, I kind of did the same thing. I didn't say, oh, wow, what a close fight. That could have gone either way. I was very lucky to get that decision, which is what I should have said. I was all high on my own ego. And also at the same time, I thought I was going to blitz him. So I kind of had this not pre-planned speech, but people were saying that he should have won the Ultimate Fighter. So I went, oh, who's the same winner of the Ultimate Fighter? Same one as always, back to wrestling or whatever, which was a really douchey thing to say. And even in London, I got booed, you know, and then on social media, I was getting slaughtered on Twitter, in my inbox, everything. You know, this was 2007, so social media wasn't as big, but still, there was definitely a turn. And after that, in America, I was public enemy number one. And that's kind of a similar situation. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I think if he handles it well and going forward and learns from this, you know, then it'll be okay. But if he continues like this, because somebody said, oh, he's gone heel. He hasn't gone heel. Going like heel, that's a term from wrestling for all mm-hmm. English people. You know, it's when you're trying to be the bad guy. They're doing that on purpose. You know what I mean? They're embracing that. They're doing it on purpose and being a bad guy. You know, what I did wasn't being a heel. I was just being a dick. What Paddy did is not being a heel. He's just like getting on people's nerves. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because as you say, mixed martial arts fans these days are very educated and we do know what we're looking at. And, you know, Jared Gordon came out and he's adamant that he won that fight. I mean, what do you think's next? Because Paddy said he's too big now for the O2 Arena in London. There's a pay-per-view on there in March, which is
saying hilarious. That'll make sure that you're not.
No, this is what I'm not trying to rip on him. I'm not. Yeah. I'm really not.
Neither am I. We're just speaking on it.
Jared's not ranked. And because I said to him, I said, who do you want to fight next? He said, I don't need to say anyone's name. I don't want to give anyone clout. And I pushed back. I said, what? You think Dustin Poirier, Gaethje, Oliveira, Makhachev, they don't need to say your name for clout. But these are the guys that you should be looking to fight. They're the top of the division, you know? So what do you think happens next? I wouldn't mind seeing a rematch in London of Jared versus Paddy.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I think I wouldn't mind seeing a rematch there. The problem is, and again, this is my analytical opinion. This has nothing to do on Paddy as a person or what he's doing, what he's saying. Just looking at the tape, the X's and the O's, as you quote unquote win, you're going to continue to work your way up.
Yep.
There's a lot tougher matchups than Jared Gordon. What about the guy that just beat Jared Gordon? Grant Dawson? Grant Dawson is a problem for Paddy in the things that the mistakes that I've seen him make. You know what I mean? Like once he runs into a guy that's got serious power in his hands, he's not going to have a choice. He's going to have to fix those flaws on his feet. You cannot walk into range at 155 pounds with your chin up in the air and your hands down kind of bouncing around. You can't do it. You can't take that many left hooks from most of the other guys in the division. It's fortunately for him, Jared Gordon's a little bit of a smaller 55er and isn't necessarily known for the huge power in his hands. So I wouldn't mind seeing a rematch, but what I'd rather see is Paddy acknowledge maybe where he's got some holes in his game and shore those up first.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm just trying to bring up the top 15 right now, and here we go. I mean, because we're talking fringe level, obviously he's not going to go in. All right, 15, Tony Ferguson. Tony Ferguson is, you know, God bless him. God bless him. I'm not going to say it. We all know.
We know.
Yeah, love Tony. Conor McGregor, Renato Moicano, Demir Ismagulov, Dan Hooker, Jalen Turner, Armin Sarukian, Mataj Gamrot, Dos Anjos, Fazeev, Chanda Benil, Gaethje, Poirier, Oliveira, Makhachev. So he's got some work to do. You know,
he's got some work to do. You know, maybe like a guy like Gamrot or Sarukian, like that's the level he's putting himself on. You know what I mean? This is where a lot of people are going to say, why are you comparing Paddy to those other people? We're not. He is. He's the one saying that he, you know, that he's on that level. A guy like Gamrot and Sarukian and Jalen Turner, and those are just really tough fights for him right now for the skill set that I've seen on Saturday night.
Now, to put a positive on it, though, because I don't, because it sounds like I'm hating, and I'm not. I support, do you know, I support nearly all fighters, you know, regardless of where they're from. But certainly if they're from the UK, I have that extra little oomph in my support, so to speak. He's 4-0 in the UFC. All right. Yeah. He got a questionable decision. You can't blame him for the judges. Granted, he could have been a bit more humble on the microphone, but let's be honest, it's not the end of the world. It's not the end of the world. He's 4-0 in the UFC. He's still a megastar in the UFC, and he's going to have a lot of big opportunities going forward. He has to rise to those opportunities because having a gimmick, having the hair, having a funny sense of humor and all the rest of it, that's all well and good. It's great, but this isn't a podcast. It's a fighting sport. You know what I mean? So there's no reason why he can't go away and fix those things and then continue to win, you know. But he does have, in my opinion, what we saw from Jared and what we saw against Jordan Levitt in that first round. He's, as you say, he's an expert back taker and he's brilliant at that. And obviously he has some dynamic moves and some great jiu-jitsu and whatnot. But to step into that elite territory, because he is, I mean, Jared isn't ranked, but you got to think it has to be a ranked opponent next for Paddy.
It has to,
because you can't keep giving him these guys when he's getting co-main event spots or even a main event, which he's not going to get main event, but co-main event spots, you need to have a fighter of a certain magnitude. Paddy has that. He has the following. He's not yet ranked. But if he's going to get ranked, then you have to fight someone like Jake Paul. Keep going on about being bloody the best boxer and he's going to be a champion in boxing. you're yet to fight a boxer in your boxing career.
Right.
You're not going to be champion of the world unless you start to chip away at some ranked opponents. Mm-hmm. And you have to experiment at some point. And I'm sure he wants to, or maybe that's why he doesn't say anyone's name, because he doesn't want to create that. One guy, and now we're going to flip-flop Fibbity Bit Bop into a different fight, but one that's interesting and could take place, but then again, it wouldn't be a ranked opponent, would be Aliyah Topuria. Yeah. Who obviously opened up the main card against Bryce Mitchell. I don't know if you know the full extent of what happened in March in London. I think it was March or July. It was March, I think. You know, Paddy said some comments. It offended Aliyah. They got into a huge scuffle. There was, you know, they were held back by security, and it's been back and forth. Aliyah's calling him out. So that might be a next fight, because it wouldn't be someone ranked, but it'd be a tough fight for Paddy and a guy at a weight class below coming up. What do you think about that?
I love that. I love that fight. And I think Topuria is willing to come up to 55 and fight Paddy. I think that sells. That's huge. That's interesting. I think that answers a lot of the questions that I think a lot of us as analysts are going to have.
Hold on. Harrington's in the chat distracting. Who's ranked at featherweight? Yes, I know he's ranked at featherweight. We're talking about a lightweight fight, Harrington, with the greatest of respect, bro. Do you know what I mean?
The other note I put in there, he does have a knockout at 155 this year.
Was that Jai Herbert?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. But thank you, Harrington, for totally distracting me. Anthony, I have no idea what you said. Idiocy coming through the chat.
God damn it, Harrington.
God's sake.
No, I think that's a fantastic fight, especially because Topuria is known to kind of bounce back and forth, obviously, between 55 and 45. Maybe not all the time, but he's willing to do it. He's shown the willingness. He doesn't like Paddy. Paddy doesn't like him. It sells. It's very interesting to, I think, us as analysts, because I think it would answer all the questions that we have coming out of this fight, going into that one. Like, Topuria is a fantastic striker. He's got the power in his hands. He's got the jiu-jitsu. He can wrestle. He can do everything. So it's not like Paddy's not going to be able to just skip and go to the jiu-jitsu. You can't just skip out on the striking part of it, just start shooting takedowns, because Topuria, one, just submitted a really high level black belt in Bryce Mitchell.
He's got excuse me.
You all right there?
I've got a really bad cough at the minute, and my chest is so bad. Coughing up a lot of phlegm.
No.
Oh, beautiful podcasting, guys.
There we go.
You can't get it through the screen, though. Don't worry.
They're perfect.
I feel fine, though, as well. It's one of those things. I'm coughing like crazy.
I kind of had a cough the last couple of weeks.
I feel
too.
Fine, though. It's gross.
Anyways, he's got a black belt in jiu-jitsu himself. I like that fight. I think that, in my opinion, that's the fight to make.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, we're going to get into all the other cards, all the other fights on the card, and some breaking news. In the meantime, try and get Jamal for Thursday or next week. I'm in Toronto. We were supposed to have Sugar Sean O'Malley today, but I was working night shoots and I just kind of forgot to reach out. So hopefully we'll get Sean for Thursday.
I'm going to text him right now.
Text him right now on the show. Beep, 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 beep,
beep, beep, beep, beep, beep, beep, beep.
Anthony Smith, text Jamal Hill. All right, let's just talk about RocketMoney.com, which was formerly known as True Bill. Listen, there's lots of subscriptions that you sign up to. You know, maybe it's little apps. Maybe it's, TV channels or whatever it is. There's loads of stuff. We all do it. You see something, you think, I'll give that a try. And then month after month after month, little bits of money, $4, $5, $7, whatever it is, they're coming out. And you don't know about them. You forget about them. And canceling them is a real issue. It takes time. You got to go into the bank. You got to call the bank. You got to do all this stuff. Well, now with Rocket Money, they make that extremely easy. Basically, it's the app. You open up the app and it shows all your subscriptions. So you can see it all there in black and white. Very, very simple. And then it lets you cancel all the subscriptions that you don't want. Okay, so Rocket Money can even find subscriptions that you didn't even know you were paying for, and you may even find out that you've been double charged sometimes. It will highlight that. To cancel a subscription, all you have to do is press cancel, and Rocket Money, they will take care of the rest. So lots of people are saving a lot of money using Rocket Money. Check it out, because I guarantee, I started doing this, we looked at it, and I was very, very shocked. I was surprised. You know, VPNs from every time I've traveled all over the world, stupid subscriptions, like apps that you think, you know, $1.99, $2.99 that you haven't used in forever. I'm telling you right now, you will be surprised. Rocket Money highlights it all there in black and white, very straightforward. And as I say, no calling the bank, nothing like that. You just press cancel. This will literally save you hundreds of dollars a year. So get rid of useless subscriptions with Rocket Money right now. Go to rocketmoney.com/believe. Seriously, this will save you hundreds per year. That is rocketmoney.com/believe. Harrington, come on, brother. How are you, my friend? Come on.
I'm doing excellent.
Good. What have we got in the news, in the notes, in the news?
Okay, in the non-MMA news?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay. Let's see here. How about this one? What would you do if you woke up tomorrow morning and there was an extra $700,000 in your bank account?
Just totally accidentally.
Just, you know, you go to bed, there's $1,000 in that account. You wake up, there's $701,000 in that account.
Yeah. We'll just read out the story so Anthony knows and everyone else listens to what you're referring to, as opposed to us going off on a tangent. That's not... Read out the story and we give our reactions to it.
Okay, so a Australian rapper woke up one morning with that exact situation. He found over $700,000 deposited in his bank account. He went to an ATM, found out that he could take out some of this money, went on like a big shopping spree, then was like, all right, well, I got the rest of this money. Time to go start buying gold bullion. He bought $600,000 worth of gold bars, and he is now facing 18 months in jail for criminal misuse of funds.
He's going to jail?
Yeah.
That's on you.
That's ridiculous, isn't it?
That's on the bank. They're going to have to eat that. You got to take that L. Like, if I'm at a restaurant and they set a real good steak or a real good looking Moscow meal on my table, I'm going to fucking drink it or I'm going to eat it. And if someone gets mad about it, you're going to have to make another one. That's on you guys. You're going to send another one to them.
Yeah.
If you deposit money into my account, that's my fucking money. That's your fault.
That's a good, is it an analogy or comparison? Because I've had that in a restaurant before, where a waiter just walked over there, he goes, sir, and put it down. And it was something that I definitely didn't order, but I was starving. And I'm like, oh my God, that appetizer looks amazing. And I'll just play dumb. I just went, eat a little bit and then go, oh, sir, I never ordered this, but I've eaten a bit. Sorry, I didn't realize. Should we just keep it and not put it on the bill? Because you fucked up. Hey, right, listen, so the bank's messed up. They've put in all that money into his account, right? And let's be honest, right? He obviously knew, because that's why he went and bought loads of gold bullion, because he thought, right, I don't want to waste it, but I've got to buy something right now. So what can I buy? And it was smart. You don't want a Lamborghini sitting on the drive. You want to be able to hide something or whatever. So he's bought a ton of gold bullion. Smart guy, smart move. But you're right. That isn't his fault. The bank messed up. Granted, I'm not sure if you can look at what the law is, Brian, or something. I'm sure there's something in the law that ignorance isn't a defense or something like that.
That's the best one I got always.
But yeah, me too, because it's true. I'm not even lying. I'm ignorant. If you see $700,000 in your account, I don't know. It's a tricky one. If you spend it all, I mean, you knew that it wasn't your money, but the bank put it there. It's like somebody puts cash through your letterbox and you spend it. Does that make you a criminal?
I don't think so.
No. I don't think so either.
I mean, legally does it? Probably, but not in my opinion.
So it says here the bank does not need your permission to recoup their mistaken deposits. So they can just go in and take it out. And if it's not there,
what if it's gone?
Then you get criminal misuse of funds.
I fucking gotcha. I beat you to it.
That's BS, isn't it? That's not right. That's not right. So basically, if you spend it all and you own a house, then they'll just say, right, well, we're taking your house. You know, we're going to recover our funds via whatever assets you have.
I'd say sweet. Take my $400,000 house and I'll keep your $750,000.
Yeah.
We'll call it even.
take your gold bullion and run. Right. He was a rapper as well, was he, Harrington? What kind of music? Oh, what kind of music? I mean, he's not a well-known rapper. This is great for him as a rap career. You know, normally you want to kill someone. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Trailer Park Boys. I don't know if you've ever watched Trailer Park Boys. Did you ever watch that, Anthony? Come on, you must know that.
I don't think so.
Bro, you're from Arkansas. The Trailer Park Boys.
I'm from Nebraska. I'm from Nebraska.
Why do I always say Arkansas?
I don't know.
You but also, Park Boys.
I didn't grow up in a trailer either, though.
No, I know.
Not against. Listen, nothing against people that did grow up in trailers. I mean, I've been to lots of good parties and a lot of really nice trailers.
I've never been in a trailer in my life. Is there some good ones?
They're all good for the most part.
Yeah. No, in Trailer Park Boys, you should watch. It's this dumb show. I used to watch it years ago. There's a rapper called J-Rock. You know, and he wants his rap career to take off. So they're like, we've got to frame a murder. Well, in this case, you know, he went out and bought a bunch of gold bullion. He got arrested for it. His career is going to take off like crazy. We're talking about him on here. Yeah. Anyway, all right.
We should get him on the show.
Get him on the show. what would be his rap name? Bullion. Gold bullion.
Gold bullion. Sounds like gold a good rap name to me.
Number 7 on the charts this week. All right. So Ilia Topuria, Bryce Mitchell. Topuria wiped the floor with him, mm-hmm. pretty much, right? It was one-way traffic throughout mm-hmm. 2.5 rounds until he got the submission. Topuria was sensational. He couldn't miss with the hands. Yeah. He out-grappled him in every area, finished it with a submission. You know, Mitchell, I know he come out and he said that he had the flu last week. What do you make of that?
Well, he didn't look like himself at all. That, you know, but I thought this was going to be a tough matchup for Bryce because Topuria is not Edson Barboza. Edson's a much better striker, but he has no grappling. Like, he's not anywhere close to Bryce Mitchell in the grappling area. So,
and Barboza's near the end of his career, let's be honest.
Right, right. He didn't beat the young Barboza who spinning heel kick Terry Eatem, you know?
Yeah.
I think Barboza is the better striker. But Topuria's equally as powerful with a much better wrestling and grappling game. So I kind of kicked myself in the ass afterwards, like, God, why didn't you see it like that? You know, like I thought in my mind, not all black belts are created equal. So in the little bit of grappling, in the little bit of grappling that I had seen from Topuria, I thought Bryce Mitchell was just the more dominant grappler. I thought that Bryce would be able to get on top and slow him down, but he just wasn't. So maybe he was sick. He didn't look himself, but I'm not willing to discredit Topuria's game plan and his skills and abilities and say that's because Bryce was sick. It could just be Ilya just never gave him the opportunity to be himself.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost discrediting Ilya's win, isn't it? You mm-hmm. know what I mean? So that's why.
And I'm not willing to do that.
Yeah, you can't. Bryce Mitchell stepped in there. He said he had flu a week ago. I mean, and the flu is a term that gets thrown around a lot. Do you know what I mean? Did you ever do that? Oh, man, I had the flu. When you have the flu, you're on death's door. You are in bed. You are bedridden. You are sweating. You feel like crap. Like I used to say to Rebecca all the time, oh, come on, babe, I've got the flu. I'm not going to work. You know, come on, make us a cup of tea. Make us some toast or whatever. I was probably just hungover or I had a little sniffle. Do you know mm-hmm. what I mean? The flu gets thrown around a lot, but I'm sure he was suffered some kind of sickness. But the reality is, regardless of what happened, he was beaten by the better man. He was mm-hmm. beaten by the better man. Next, I would like to see him and Paddy Pimblett, so we know what's next for him. Bryce Mitchell, he'll learn from that experience, you know, because it's cliched. You always learn from your losses, you know. But up until now, he's been able to go out there, out-wrestle everybody, hold them down, work his submission game, and it's worked for him every time. On this occasion, if we're to eradicate any thoughts about flu or sickness or him not coming in at 100%, he wasn't able to enforce his grappling game. Mm-hmm. And when he couldn't do that, he was then forced to stand and trade. So he showed a little hole in that regard. So I think he just needs to round out the skill set because he's probably 80-20, 80% grappling, 20% striking.
Right.
Or maybe 70-30. That's always going to get down to the 50-50 range, you know what I mean, to be a complete fighter. So he'll learn from it. He'll get better, and he's still a young guy. What was next? I'm dying to talk about Darren. Was Darren next? Or what was the next fight on the card?
I think Darren was next.
Right, yeah, it was. You're right. Yeah, Darren Till, Dricus du Plessis. Tough one. Darren's a good friend of mine. Go on, give me your thoughts, Anthony, because I wouldn't hung out with Darren back at his Airbnb afterwards. So I've got things to say about that, but give us the fight.
What? Well, Dricus kind of double-crossed Darren a little bit at the very beginning by going right into a grappling exchange up against the fence when I think we all expected a striking battle from the get-go, which was a smart move by Dricus to jump on Darren in the grappling area right away as fast as he could. And Darren just was a little weird. I don't know if he was a little flat or maybe he just took him a minute to get going, but he was – I mean, the referee about stopped that fight a couple times against the fence. And it was not that Darren was taking hard shots or that he was hurt.
There was a couple, though.
There was a couple that were hard.
Doosh. And I was like, oh, shit. And they were coming in quick succession.
And Dricus just wouldn't – he just wouldn't let him go. And Darren just – I don't know if he just had a brain fart or whatever. He just would not make the correct adjustments to get face to face and get off the fence. So the first round is kind of a, you know, like, okay, Darren, we got to figure something out here. And then the second round, he was magnificent. Like he couldn't miss. He was light on his feet. He was fast as he was seeing all the punches coming. He just has these flashes of brilliance. You know, I was like, oh, okay. This is the Darren Till that I was expecting to see. And I thought he was rolling downhill and it was just going to be a matter of time before Dricus crashed. And then the third round, I don't know what the hell happened. Like sometimes it seems like Darren loses focus or he gets distracted or maybe he's doing really well. And he loses confidence that he can continue doing it the way that he's doing it. I don't know what it is. But he just
refresh my memory. So in the third round, I know he got taken down and the takedown mm-hmm. came very easily and he got neck cranked and the submission came fast. On the feet, what was happening prior to that? I haven't watched it back. Can you remember?
Yeah, Darren was – I don't want this to be like a knock on Darren, but he's not moving the way that he used to. I don't know if – through some of the injuries that he hasn't completely gotten his movement back and maybe he never will. I don't know, but he's not as smooth as he used to be. Like even in the submission or in the takedown defense, I don't know if moving up a weight class has slowed him down a little bit. And maybe that's why he looks different, but he looks very robotic in some of those takedown defense kind of transitions. So even like as he got taken down, he just looks so awkward falling. And that's kind of where, what sticks in my head is the awkward way that he went down and kind of almost gave his back up because he had to catch himself as he was falling. It was weird. It was a weird transition.
Yeah. No, it was. Well, I went to see him straight away after the fight. You know, I went to have a quick word to check on him, see how he's doing. And, you know how it is. You know, you're down. It's not the end of the world. You're holding it together. You keep it in perspective. You've lost a fight. You know, it's not like one of your children passed away in a car crash or something. So he was down. He was devastated, but he was still holding it. He was being a man. You know, then I went to see him afterwards and he told me that number one, his ankle, something happened to his ankle in the fight and that was really bad. And then, of course, there was talk of the ACL. So I went back to the Airbnb with all the Block Asset boys that he works with. That's a company that him and I are both involved with. We're partners in it. And Brendan Loughnan was there and we just had, you know, we hung out. We had a few drinks. We didn't want to talk about the fight the whole time because otherwise that becomes, you know, it's like you're focusing on the doom and gloom. You know what I mean? So, you know, mm-hmm. we're trying to have a laugh as well. But, yeah, you know, I think it's a mentality thing. I think the fact that going into that fight, losing four out of the last five, really was at a focal point in his mind. So, therefore, he wasn't pulling the trigger. Because he said, I don't know what was wrong with it. He said, I just couldn't go. You know, he said, I wanted to throw more. I wanted to do this. I didn't use my kicks. And he said, but I just, for some reason, I couldn't. And I've been there. And I'm sure you have as well. Mm-hmm. And that is the mental block. That is the nerves. That is the anxiety. That is the second guessing everything you're going to do in your mind because you haven't been getting the results lately. You know what I mean? Confidence is one of the biggest weapons. It's a double-edged sword. Of course it is because you can have too much and then that will cost you the fight. But you got to have that confidence. You got to have that self-belief to throw. You got to know that I'm going to go for it. I'm going to go one, two, and these are going to land. I'm not going to go one, douche, and then get caught with a massive two myself.
Right.
And that's the second, that's the thing that goes on in your mind all the time. You're like, mm-hmm. Do I throw a kick? Because if I throw the kick, then I might throw the kick and he might throw a right cross or whatever. No, I'm gonna do a double leg. Oh, no, but he's got a good take. These are the millisecond thoughts that go through your mind before you throw something. And even though he'd never identified that, it has to be because of the losses. You know, he wasn't throwing mm-hmm. kicks. He wasn't as busy. When he did throw, he had great success. Those charging knees that he was using, they were beautiful. I thought that he looked a little bit overtrained. You know, he was keeping up with Brendan Loughton out in Thailand. I know how they train out there in Thailand. They train how I used to train. You can't push it balls to the walls each and every day. He was very lean coming into this. He looked in the best shape of his life. I think going forward, if he's staying at 185, he needs to bulk up. He needs to go on a serious strength and conditioning routine. I would like to see him. But even Dreeker said on the fight presser, he said he wasn't strong enough. I could feel it. So I think that was one of them, one of the issues, overtrained. I feel like he wasn't strong enough. The takedown defense wasn't there. And I feel like he was second-guessing everything in there because of the losses.
Which is the biggest problem, is the second-guessing himself. And you're right. I've been there. You've been there. What does he do now? You know, he's got to – and he's not going to want to. But he's going to have to back way up, and he's going to have to give someone way down in the rankings an opportunity, which he doesn't want to do. Yeah. He doesn't want to do that because he wants to continue to climb. He wants to swing for the fences and get his spot back and look ahead. But I think the best case scenario for him is to drop way down and give one of these up and comers, these young guys, these unknowns, give him an opportunity to face a big name guy that holds a decent spot in the rankings, and hope that, you know, you can use that step down in competition as an opportunity to get your mojo back. The flip side of that is you drop one of those guys, you got a big fucking problem.
Well, that's always the problem, isn't it? It's the risk and reward. Mm-hmm. You know, you say, okay, I'm going to step down a little bit because I've beat this guy, but then you don't beat the guy. And it's like, right, you're done. But that's fight sports. It's always a gamble. That's the way it goes. That's the game. He'll be back. He's still only 30 years old. He still knows that he has got a long time left in this sport. And I, obviously, I'm a friend, and people say, oh, you're blind. I think he still has a lot of ability. I think
you're blind. That's a bad joke.
Oh, God. Yeah. This thing's blind. Yeah, I am, dickhead. As a bat. Okay. I'm walking into walls. The main thing is, and I say this all the time, as long as he doesn't give up on himself. If you give up on yourself, it's over. You know, and it sounds like he hasn't. So I look forward to it. I've invited him out to my house. I said, why don't you come out here for a bit? You know, you and Brendan come stay at my house. We'll do some training. You know, not that I'm going to fix it all for you, but, you know, not that I think I'm the guru, because I'm not, far from it. But, you know, if you want a little training holiday, come and bloody see me. Harrington.
He hates us.
Yeah, he hates us.
He's mad.
Why do you hate Anthony Smith?
There's no hate. There's, you know, hate has no place on this show.
Oh my God.
I don't
there's no hate
you.
In your heart.
I don't believe you.
Well, if you don't hate him, give him a good story to talk about.
Yeah, give me a good one.
Okay. How about this? Andrew Tate says that Brazilian jiu-jitsu has absolutely
that was
no
the first place you went. Give us a good one. He says, Andrew Tate.
This is good for you two to sink your teeth into. Says jiu-jitsu has absolutely no place in a street fight.
BJ, it never shuts up about BJJ.
BJJ, 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 BJJ. Let me tell you something. BJJ is absolutely useless outside of the cage or your dojo. It's useless on the street.
What is BJJ for people like
Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Oh, cool.
It's useless. You can't do a double leg takedown on concrete. You're going to fuck yourself up. Even if you do take him down to the ground, many submissions don't work if he can bite or if he can scratch your eyes or if he can pull a knife.
Facts.
Thirdly, you don't know if he has friends. You're going to take him to the ground, put him in an arm bar, and his friend's going to fucking football kick you in the head or curb stomp you, and you're going to die.
Yeah. True.
Right? The number one rule of street fighting is stay on your feet.
Yes. He's so wrong. He's out of his mind. Look, listen.
You think so?
Oh, fucking right. He is.
Okay, tell me about it.
I'll tell you, well, right. He's wrong. You don't think he's right?
I don't think he's all the way wrong.
No. Some elements of what he said there is correct, that you don't want to do a double leg takedown on the street. Because I've said this before on the show. if you're fighting multiple people and you take someone down and get on top of them, yeah, of course the friends are going to run up behind you and stick the boot in. They're gonna piece you up pretty quick, right? But in a one-on-one environment, you know what I mean? If you're going up against another man, a black belt at jiu-jitsu versus someone that's not, I'll take the black belt all day long. And there's also a lot of other techniques. You don't have to go to the ground. A lot of them can work standing and things like that. Scratching. You think you're going to scratch your way? Yes, Brian, what do you say?
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was just saying we had that video of Enzo Gracie mopping that dude up in the subway.
Yeah. It's all right. Ooh, you're going to scratch. You're going to bite. The moves that you can do in jiu-jitsu are going to kill you. Shut up. There's a reason why people don't scratch in the UFC when there was no rules. You know what I mean?
That's a great point.
You know, like my son said, why don't you tickle people? Why don't you tickle people if you're getting caught in a submission? It's like, bro, because when the stakes are high and the adrenaline's flowing and it's life or death, tickling doesn't work, okay? And I say to my son Lucas all the time, because I'm trying to get him to focus on jiu-jitsu, you know, because it's so great for him and all the other advantages and whatnot. But I said, if you stick to it, son, properly, and when you're an older man, I said, obviously, he's not a violent or confrontational or even aggressive type at all. I said, but it's nice to have that assurance that if, God forbid, you come up against some dickhead one day, you've got the confidence about you that you're going to be able to handle the situation if it goes off. Now, of course, boxing, kickboxing, whatever, you can stand on your feet and maybe go bang, bang a few people. But if you're not the type of person that's going around getting involved in gang fights, do you know what I mean? If it's just you and someone's trying to start and be the aggressor with you, having jiu-jitsu is very bloody useful, Andrew Tate.
Yeah, so the parts that I don't think he's all the way wrong. Like you said, if you're with multiple attackers, jiu-jitsu in and of itself is a slippery slope. That's going to be it's going to be tough if that's all you know or all you're allowed to use. In terms of the biting and scratching, I'll make you a deal. Like if Andrew Tate wants to have a competition, you be able to bite, you be able to scratch, and you can even have a knife. And it's just me and you, and we're in a room, and all I can use is jiu-jitsu, and all you can do is kickbox. I'm leaving that room with whatever was in your pockets, 100%.
Okay, so never mind Jake Paul, Andrew Tate. Andrew Tate can do whatever he wants.
Mm-hmm.
You'll just use jiu-jitsu.
Mm-hmm.
You won't use your devastating striking. It'll just be jiu-jitsu. And the winner, what are we saying? Did you say he could even use a knife?
Yeah, for sure.
You're going to have to probably specify no firearms.
Yeah, I mean, he brought up scratching, biting, and a knife. If you want to add those in to your striking abilities, and I'll just do jiu-jitsu, you take the knife, you can bite, you can scratch, and they just lock us in a room, and whoever comes out wins. Like, I'm walking out of that room, and I'm probably walking out with whatever you had in your pockets, too.
Yeah. No, I agree. But I just love it. This is the real fight. How much are we willing to put on this?
Whatever he wants.
Well, there you got it. Andrew Tate, there's an official call from light heavyweight contender, Anthony Smith.
But I do agree that in multiple offender situations, jiu-jitsu is a little bit hairy at times. But, like, you know, if you're walking down a dark alley, and it's just me and some regular ass guy, I am fairly confident that I'm leaving that situation with just jiu-jitsu alone. And so what if they bite you? Like, okay, like,
ow,
I just snapped your neck. Like, you can have whatever chunk of my shoulder you just took. Like, you keep it. But, like, I'm leaving that situation.
Yeah, no, I always say it because I think it was with Lewis. We were having this conversation a while ago. You know, of course, that's why jiu-jitsu is incomplete. That's why in the UFC, it evolved into mixed martial arts.
Right.
Because there's always flaws. There's always weaknesses. There is no one perfect style. You know, so that's essentially what he's saying there.
Right.
But it's better to have it than not have it. That is for damn sure. That is for damn sure. And he's obviously never done any jiu-jitsu. And of course, he's a Thai boxer.
Well, what happens if you run into if he's in a street fight, all he can do is Thai box?
Yes.
Like, and then all of a sudden, you're face to face and you guys are grappling, like, now you're fucked. One singular martial art there's always going to be a give and a take. Is he's going to be devastating from the outside. But if someone gets a hold of you and you don't know any jiu-jitsu at all, you're proper fucked.
Well, but like the Germans. That's it. What film is that from, Anthony? Oh, is he proper fucked? Yeah, Tommy. Proper fucked. Like the Germans. What happens if he catches the air? Well, Tommy, he gets fucked. What? Proper fucked? You don't know?
No.
I'm not asking you, Brian. I'm asking Anthony Smith. He's putting the answer in the chat.
Probably snatch.
Yeah, you're a prick, Brian. What are you doing?
Oh, my Brian's going to start sending me text messages on these movies.
He is. I feel it. The mutiny. You're ganging up behind my back. You're giving him the answers.
You knew he did not know that movie.
Tommy. Where were we? But listen, what is it? What you were just explaining there is UFC 1. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We had Kung Fu. We had Sumo. We had Karate. We had all those martial arts. And who was victorious?
Jiu-Jitsu.
Jiu-Jitsu came out on top. You know, and that proves it all right there. Granted, multiple assailants at once with knives, and
he's right there. That's tough.
And if they can scratch, what if you could scratch my eyes out? Well, if you fucking scratch my eyes out, I'm not just gonna fucking let go. Hold on, I'll scratch my eye out right now. There you go, Andrew Tate. Feel free, scratch it out, motherfucker. Won't do a damn thing. Whatever.
We're just leaving the eye out now.
Well, I didn't want to spend time away from the show.
No, it's okay. Now people want to see. This is the best part. There it goes.
Your James Bond villain.
Yes.
Demo tape.
Fuck yeah.
Do you know when I go through airports? I don't have the the pre-check or whatever. But I do have me clear. Either. Do you have? I know you don't. Do you have clear? Do you ever use that?
Yeah, I do.
Clear is the best. It's that thing you go up and you log in, and then they just walk you right past everyone, right up to security, and through you go. It's awesome. And it's only like $100 a year or something like that. Yeah. It's well worth it. But every time I go for clear, they want to do a retina scan. Do you know what I mean? And it never works. I'm like, I've got a fake eye. Like, what do you mean you've got a fake eye? And I'm like, oh, God, here we go.
Do you know Vitor Belfort?
Yes, exactly.
That's where I would start the story if I was you every time.
All right, let's just talk about Shopify right now. Shopify, if you listen to the show, they've supported us for a while. Basically, if you're an entrepreneur, if you're running a business, whatever kind of business it is, you've got to get online. You've got to scale your business. You've got to go out there to the entire world. And that is what Shopify allows you to do in a very cheap, not complicated, easy, and cost-effective way. You can reach customers online and across social networks. And there's all kinds of tools that you can integrate all these different apps with. But the main thing is that it gets you online and it instantly allows you to accept all the major payment methods, like, you know, of course, credit cards and things like that. So Shopify is more than a store. Connect with your customers, drive sales, and manage your day-to-day. Shopify, as I said, instantly lets you accept all major payment methods. And Shopify has thousands of integrations and third-party apps from on-demand printing to accounting to advanced chatbots and beyond. Supercharge your knowledge with sales and your success. Discover endless possibilities. Shopify is tirelessly reinventing tools for growth, helping millions of businesses succeed every day. So right now, you got to go to shopify.com/believe. That is all lowercase, and you will get a free 14-day trial. Listen, if you've got a business, you've got to be online. You don't have to call up some guys that are going to develop a website. They're going to charge you a fortune. It could be thousands and thousands of dollars. Shopify.com/believe, all lowercase. You're going to get a free 14-day trial, and you get full access to all of Shopify's entire suite of special features. So as I say, grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/believe right now. All right, so there was lots of great fights on. We haven't got time to go through them all, but the main event, the only reason I haven't spoke about the main event yet is because it was kind of a boring fight and it ended in a draw, and we kind of knew what happened. You know what I mean? But what did you think, real quick, on that? Did you agree with the draw, or did you think somebody was robbed? Not robbed,
I don't think anybody's robbed. I think that it ended up a draw because we got some wacky judging. I think Blachowicz did enough to win the fight.
Thought he got the first three?
Yeah. Yeah, two and three for sure. Brown.
So you're saying round five was a 10-8?
I don't think so.
Right.
I don't think so. If Darren Till round one isn't a 10-8, how in the fuck is round five of Ankalaev Blachowicz a 10-8?
That's a really good point.
So that's where the confusion is coming.
That's a really good point. And that brings up consistency with exactly. the judges. Because there's that's what none. We need to see. And I see people like Helwani. I see a lot of people going crazy. They're talking about this Douglas Crosby that apparently on Friday night had a horrendous scoring at Bellator. I never saw that, so I can't comment on it. But the thing is, because I see a lot of people talking about the judging and the criteria and all the rest of it, and the UFC need to make changes. Brendan Schaub was chatting a bunch of shit, saying it's the UFC that allowed this to happen over and over again. He was saying the definition of insanity is making the same mistake over and over again, but then doing the same thing or some shit like that. It's not the UFC's obligation. It's the athletic commission. Right. And I will say this, the criteria for judging is spot on. It's just that the judges are inept at doing that, in judging it that way, because they don't have the experience or they don't have the necessary skills or understanding of the martial arts to score it appropriately. And yeah, I'm sure the UFC would love all judges to be former fighters, but the athletic commission, they are in charge of appointing the judges.
Right. And the consistency is, for me, the biggest problem. There's a lot of decisions I disagree with, but if you're going to suck all the time so that we know exactly what we're getting into. So like if Darren Till round one is not a 10-8, you cannot make Magomed Blachowicz a 10-8. So like, if that's never going to be a 10-8, then fine, never make it a 10-8. So we know what we're working with here. You got it. Sorry, Harrington. What's up?
No. I'm just going to say, for the love of God, this better be good. Anthony was off. He was making big points. I was great. I was there. I was on the edge of my seat. Harrington comes in. Correction, guys.
I'm looking at the scorecards, how the judges had it through two rounds for Darren Till versus Duplessis, and two of the three judges did give a 10-8 round in the first to Dreesis, including Sal D'Amato, who scored a 10-8 in that fifth round for Ankalaev.
Feel good, Harrington? No, come back on. You feel good? You just undermine the co-host of the show.
You could have sent
a little DM, a little text. By the way,
Okay, well, I mean, I think that... Wrong. Well, I think that proves my point. Were those two rounds equal?
I don't think so. I mean, round one was big. Round one for Dreykus was massive.
It was huge. You know? Okay, so that is a 10, if that's a 10-8, then it's got to be that bad every single time.
Yeah,
that's my point. Like, what Darren Till landed, like, I don't know, three punches in the whole first round. You know what I mean? And granted, Blachowicz didn't land any in the fifth round, but it was also a lot of grappling. It was very jiu-jitsu heavy. The discrepancy in strikes landed between those two guys, I would imagine, are vastly different. So we need some consistency. We need these guys to know what the fuck they're looking at. Like, you got to be able to, like, in the UFC at the highest level, you need judges to understand. Like, I don't give a fuck if you know what full guard to half guard to mount to side control is. I want you to know how hard it is to get from one to the next. You have to understand that.
That's a really good point. Sorry to interject there, but so he got the side control. So, do you know how hard it is, as you just said, to pass guard on some of these people? Passing guard if you've never done it and someone has a good guard, that's a hard thing to do. It needs to have the credit. They need to be accredited for the hard work and the solid work that they just did to get to a more dominant position to completely evaporate the threat of any submission.
Right. Well, and even in these exchanges where there was this one time, I don't remember who it was, but this referee or this judge was explaining why he gave a scorecard or something. And it was like, it wasn't that long ago, but there was a situation not that long ago where a fighter got a takedown, went from full guard past a really good jiu-jitsu guy, went to half guard, landed a couple strikes, nothing super solid, but he was able to land a few punches, then passed the side control, landed a couple shots, hits him with two elbows, but because of him lifting his posture to try to land the big shot, the bottom guy was able to get the underhook, work to his feet, threw like four or five punches that landed on the arms, nothing landed, and that referee or that judge explained that, oh, he got back to his feet and he landed some hard shots to end the round, so I gave him the round. Are you fucking serious? Like, there's so much more work and so much more dominant of a position as you're working your way through guard, landing punches as you kind of make pit stops at each individual position. Land two big ones, he gets to his feet and doesn't land anything hard, but because he was aggressive, you give that other round. Like, we got to fix that shit. We got to fix that
absolutely
shit.
Absolutely, because
I could go off about this for ever. It drives me crazy.
No, you're right. You're right, because the sad reality, and not the sad reality, but the reality of the situation, and this goes for a lot of people that watch the sport as a fan. If you've never done jiu-jitsu or you've never wrestled, then you don't understand and have a full comprehension of what they just achieved. So I think all judges, you can't just watch. It's like those that can't do teach or whatever. You know, it's right. Like you can also, so you can sit there and watch, and you know what it's like for these football players in the World Cup. You know, you can do that because you watch football or the Monday morning quarterback or whatever. That's essentially what they are. If they've never done it and they have no understanding, then how on earth can you judge at the highest level? I think there should be some criteria that they have some kind of qualification. And a lot of them do. A lot of them do. Like Big John McCarthy's a black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and he's been around since the birth of the sport. You know, but some of them, I bet, well, I've told this story before. John Wood was telling me. The gym that he trains at, they brought some judges came in to watch, and the questions that they were asking him, they didn't understand a damn thing. And in the end, I forget which judge it was, he left because he couldn't understand what was going on, and this was boring and a waste of his time. I thought, well, what is all this? But then you're gonna judge someone's career. Like Jared Gordon could have had the biggest win of his career and all of a sudden had this huge coming out party had he have beaten Paddy, which a lot of people generally feel that he did. Right now, Jan Blachowicz could be the champion of the world. This is life-changing stuff. Granted, he's been there before. Or Magomed could have been the champion of the world. You know, you make so much sacrifice, you blood, sweat, tears, money, personal relationships, your wives, your children, you're away from them. And then some prick that doesn't understand the sport takes all that away from you and makes it all for nothing. Because if they don't understand that, you might as well have not bothered. You might as well as not run sprints and diet like a maniac and be miserable for 2 months and be sore as hell every single day. Because that's what it takes to go through a training camp. And these pricks that don't understand the sport are going to take a victory away from you when they don't deserve it.
Well, I have a much less of an issue with the Magomed Blachowicz fight because first round, super close. 2 and 3 is definitely Jan. 4 and 5, definitely Ankalaev. That's for those boys to figure out. Do I agree with the 10-8? I don't think so, but it's not, it didn't look like a 10-8 to me. So I have less of an issue with that one, but Jared Gordon deserved that fucking win. And he worked really hard. He dealt with a lot of bullshit. Going into a fight with Paddy has got to be awful because you got all the fans and he's an American fighting a guy from the UK and got booed in his own country on his way out. Like, He deserved that win, and he worked really hard for it. He stayed really disciplined the whole time. The guy's had a lot of bad shit go on in his life, and he deserved for something good to happen to him on Saturday. And that's what drives me absolutely crazy, because he'll never get that opportunity again. Not the same way.
He won't, sadly, because that was his first ever co-main event. Not even on a fight night at the Apex, on a pay-per-view against one of the new golden boys of mixed martial arts. You know, and what a coming out party that would have been. If he'd have got that victory Saturday night, he'd be on every talk show, every MMA show, every podcast.
We'd have got him on here.
We should get him on the podcast anyway. I'd love to hear his thoughts. Yeah, be interesting. So we'll do that. Remind us. Harrington and Brian, there you go. Remind me. Or Harrington, reach out. But yeah, he would be now. Whoa, Harrington, stay on, brother. Stay on.
Brother. Are you got a fucking lights in there? What are you
doing? I know what's going on.
Hey,
we're only lightheartedly busting your balls. And when I said, oh, you're going to interrupt Anthony for that, could you not text him? You know we're only joking, don't you?
Ooh, I think Jamal texted me back.
Ooh, what did he say?
Oh, my God, he doesn't like Michael Bisping.
Oh, God.
I'm just joking.
What did he say?
Thursday. He said Thursday.
Boom, lock it in, guys. There it is. We should have Sugar Sean O'Malley and Jamal Hill on Thursday, big show. Harrison, how are you, mate? Come on, you know I'm only teasing you because
of course
everyone loves you in the comments. You know what I mean? You did cut Anthony off. You did undermine him. So I'm just gonna. My joke is that you're gonna fucking do that to our co-host. It's not. I'm not calling you an asshole or a prick or whatever. And it. Well, you are.
Yeah. On and off air.
But it was implied anyway.
It was implied. It was implied. Let's go back.
I was going to say, our good mutual friend of ours, Michael Bisping, Diego Lopez, he's like a big training partner of Jared, so I can for sure get him on the show. I will reach out to him today.
Yeah. Great.
Well, we'll leave that to you then, please. Thank you very much, Harrington. There you go. Look at that, Harrington. Who would have thought? He has a use after all. We love you, Harrington, and the believers bloody love you. By the way, merch available on the page. If you go to the YouTube channel and click store down below, there's a bunch of designs. There's some good ones. The best ones aren't up at the top. We've got to figure it out. This merch store business on the YouTube channel is hard to fathom. Anyway, I haven't got too much time left because I've got to get off to the airport shortly. I mean, as much as I love doing the show, I don't want to miss a flight. Harrington, what is the big stories in mixed martial arts that we really should cover right now, unless there's anything that's really eating away at you, Anthony?
No, you know, the MMA space is kind of just being dominated by UFC 282 Fallout for the most part. And then we got the event coming up this weekend, but I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about some of those storylines on Thursday.
Anything big that we're missing, Harrington, in the news section? Any of those stories that you feel we should cover?
Yeah, I mean, this seems kind of interesting. A pretty big name and also kind of UFC 282 fallout. Nick Diaz hosted a watch-along party for UFC 282. So a couple reporters stopped by and they talked to Nick at the event. And he said he is planning to make a big comeback in 2023. He says he feels better, faster, stronger. It's going to be the best version of Nick Diaz you've ever seen. He's got one name on his mind, Israel Adesanya.
Oh, Harrington, I said to you before we started, or maybe I never said the actual words, but the words I did use were kind of meant to, let's not bring that up because I don't want to shit on Nick Diaz. Do you know what I mean? I don't, you know, I have so much respect for Nick Diaz. Come on, he's been around forever. The last fight against Robert Lawler didn't look good. And of course, you know, he's doing a watch party. You have a few drinky poos along there. And the bloody journalists go along and they're asking him all these questions. He'll be shadow boxing. He'll be doing this and that. And he'll be like, I'm coming back, bitches. That's right. 209 all day. What's up? Israel Adesanya. That's the guy I want. You know what I mean? But we're now just going to have to take a gigantic dump on him saying that because it's not in the realm of reality.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Okay. I can't even comment on it. It's not fair. It's not fair.
Stay on, Harrison. You don't have to go. Do you know I did meet Saturday night for the first time?
Who?
Alex Pereira.
No shit. Is he as big in person as he looks?
He's massive. He's giant. I mean, Izzy's big as well, but he's as big as Izzy, but he's built. He was sat three chairs down from me next to Glover. So we had a good time at the fights. And I was like, I was trying to talk to him, and he's not very talkative. Then I find out that he doesn't speak a lick of English.
I was like, he doesn't speak any English, right?
I'm like, Jesus, come on, Alex, smile. Come on, buddy, what's up with you? Because I was said to him, I said, oh, congrats on the fight. You know, well done, champ, blah, 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 blah. And he just looked at me like that. So I'm like trying to like have a laugh at that. I was like, oh, come on,
please,
buddy.
Don't kill me.
I'm like, come on, smile. And he's like, he's a big motherfucker, man. He's a big motherfucker. What else at the weekend, though? What's going on with you, Anthony, in your personal, other than, you know, losing your fight?
Oh, you know, just fucking nothing, really. You know, I'm dealing with, got home on Sunday, did some sports. What's going on? There's nothing too crazy. Yeah.
Anything else in the notes, Harrington, before we get to questions?
Just one little thing here. Quick turnaround being asked for from the 18-year-old phenom, Raul Rosas Jr. He says he either wants to fight next weekend if somebody drops out. Otherwise, he definitely wants to get on that card in Brazil. What did you guys think of his performance and the quick turnaround?
Yeah. So
to be 18 again.
I mean, well done for bringing that up, Harrington, but you didn't bring up the big, big storyline with him. I mean, listen, 18 years old, fighting at that level. It's incredible.
He's still in high school.
It's insane.
He's in fucking high school.
Wow. And he went out there and he capitalized on the moment. He seized the day, got the submission, you know. But on Helwani's show, he was talking about fighting Aljamain Sterling right now and beating him with ease. And this is what I wanted to talk about. And it's not so much, it's not so much shitting on him, because I'm not going to do that. He's 18. But it's this new trend. And Conor McGregor is responsible for it, because Conor came in and he was uber successful, became a double champ. And in his rise, he was unstoppable. He really was. The stuff that McGregor did, and the way that he beat opponents, and the way that he captured the audience's attention, was, we hadn't seen that before. One shot in Jose Aldo. The reason I'm bringing that up is because he came in, he talked a ridiculously big game, and he backed it up every single second of the way. Right, granted, different trajectory now, can't stay on top forever. But now it seems everybody does that. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, bro, you're 18. Or other people, I'm trying to think of some other examples, they all do it. They come in like Paddy. Paddy's doing the same thing as well. You know what I mean? And it, these youngsters or these new additions coming in and talking all this mad crap. Yeah, be quietly confident. Be confident and say that, but don't, after having one fight against Jay Perrin, be calling out the champion of the world and making it sound like it's going to be easy work. Have a bit of respect for the organization and the people that inspired you in the first place to even embark on this kind of career. Have a bit of respect about the toughness it takes to win a fight and to work your way through the unranked people, then from 15 to number one and become champion of the world. And that's saying that all these new youngsters that come in and talk shit without the ability to back it up, he might have. We're yet to see, but it did make me scratch my head a little bit. Now, first of all, I'm not talking shit, because at 18 years old, take a bow, my friend. That is just unbelievable. Because when I was 18, I was off doing anything else but living a structured, disciplined lifestyle. So I take my hat off to him and I applaud him. But just with the disrespecting the champ after one win, it's a little, just slow your roll just a bit. Come on, buddy.
Sometimes it's not what you say, it's how you say it. You know, like if he was to say, listen, I have a lot of respect for Aljamain Sterling. I think that, you know, in some areas of the game, I think I can be competitive with him. But that's the direction I'm going. That's what I want. Can't be like, oh, I'm going to fucking smoke this guy. Like, come on now. Like, we all know that's not going to happen right now. And you're 18. Listen, when I was 18, I was fucking trash. Like, I was dog shit. There's no way I was.
What were you doing when you were 18 years old?
I was fighting.
You were fighting?
Yeah.
But where were you, like, mentally? Were you reckless? Were you making mistakes? Oh, were you partying as well? You, like,
partying, wild animal.
Yeah.
It was a wild animal. So, like you said, take a bow. Like, I was super impressed. It was fantastic. I think that in some aspects of the game, he needs to have that a little bit to be in the situation that he's in. Like, you got to feel like that a little bit. I think it's the responsibility of his management and his coaches to protect him a little bit and slow roll him. Like, you know, Teddy Atlas said when I had the Glover fight, and I said that I told my corners that if they, you know, that I'd already relayed early on in my career to my corners that if you throw in the towel, that I'll fire you. And Teddy really jumped my ass, like really chewed my ass. And Teddy Atlas said, they need that from you. They need to have that fire, like, I'll fucking fire you. I'm willing to go in there and die. They need me to have that to be able to be successful.
Yeah.
But it's my job to allow them to not let that happen. Does that make sense? So
yeah, no, absolutely it does.
His coaches need him to have that attitude, but it's also their responsibility to not let him go. Like, what if the UFC said, yeah, fuck it, Aljo, here's your next opponent. Like, it's his management and his coach's ability. Like, it's their responsibility to not allow that kind of stuff to happen.
But on the flip side, though, let's look at this. 18, went out, got a win, got a finish. T-Mobile Arena, packed house, pay-per-view, unbelievable, let's be honest. And now we're talking about him as well, because he did make that statement. So there's no such thing as bad press. His star is rising. And I look forward to the journey.
18-year-olds
and I wish him all the best.
18-year-olds they don't operate in the real world.
No.
Because as much, again, I have the utmost respect for anybody that steps foot, not just in the UFC octagon, in the fucking cages that are set up in bowling alleys and bars and strip. Like, I have respect for every single one of those guys. Jay Perrin's also 0-3 in the UFC. So, I mean.
Yeah.
Like,
no, exactly.
Let's work our way up here. And it's not his job to acknowledge that. It's his, the people around him. It's their job to acknowledge that and keep him on the straight and narrow. Hey,
but he still wants to be confident. You know,
he's a fucking 18-year-old killer. I'm with it.
Yeah,
I'm all. Yeah, yeah.
Me too. Me too. Do you know what I just realized? Because I was like, they're picking me up at 5 p.m. My flight is until 7:30. They're gonna get, you know, so I've got loads of time. I just realized I don't have loads of time because I've got to pack yet. And when I came here, I was like, it took half an hour to get here. At 10 o'clock at night, it's going to be 5 p.m., rush hour traffic. We still going to do the bloody ads. Guys, questions won't be happening on this one because I don't want to miss my flight. So we're going to wrap this one up here, boys. We've been going for a little bit anyway. So I'm going to end this one on 40. And I don't care what you're going to say, Hamilton. We're ending the show. So you got to go. You got to get off the screen. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to be obscene, but you've been mean. We're back on Thursday. Jamal Hill and Jamal. Sugar Sean O'Malley, hopefully. Sorry, Sean, if you see
me. And hopefully Jared Gordon.
Let's do it. Triple guest show. Whoa. Well, that would be good, actually, because we're going to talk about it this week. Anthony, always a pleasure. Harrington, thank you for everything. Brian, thank you. Guys, believers, thank you more than anything. See you on Thursday.